Hello, this is Kevin Doherty, your host for Just Thinking. I am the Chief Strategy Officer for 806 Technologies, and I have a longtime friend and someone with whom I've had the great opportunity to work as our guest today. And as you probably saw, the title of today's episode is Just Thinking Like a Scientist with Jason Osborne. And Jason is an individual with tremendous curiosity. I think he has an insatiable curiosity and a desire to figure things out. He has a tremendous knack for exploring and looking deeper into things and just trying to figure out all the different ways in which we can solve the problems of the world. But before I go too much deeper, I'm going to give Jason the opportunity to introduce himself to you in the event that you don't already know Jason Osborne. So Jason, tell us about yourself.
Kevin, it's great to be here. We go back a few years and it's always a pleasure having conversations. So thank you so much for having me here today. Yeah, I'm the chief business officer for a software company and curriculum company called SciGlass. Prior to that, I was a chief innovation officer for 6.5 years for a large school district in Texas. And prior to that, I was in biomedical science and engineering with the Howard Hughes Medical Institute, aerospace and defense prior to that, a nonprofit business that was geared towards education and paleontology. So you can imagine I was all over the map. So you were talking about curiosity. I'm a very curious individual. Grew up on a small farm in Pennsylvania and a rural area. And I really didn't know much about the world until I left the farm, lack of a better word. And that's where the curiosity began.
So let's delve deeper into that. So where the curiosity began. So where did that happen? How did it happen?
Yeah, so again, living on a farm, the closest town was about a little over 200 people. It was Farmers, Pennsylvania, of all things. And when I left the farm, I got to dabble a little bit in the world and what the world had to offer. And I just became a sponge. And I wanted to do it all. I wanted to do as much as I possibly can. I was just, like I said, naturally curious. As a young kid, you know, playing in creeks and cracking open slate to look at, you know, fossil inclusions, to fly fishing and learning about entomology and doing it. And so I was just really naturally curious as a kid. But boy, when I saw the possibilities that were out there, I didn't know where to stop. So so I never did. And yeah. I wanted to dabble into everything. And you know, small town Pennsylvania, a lot of trades up in that area of the country. So I started out in like high throughput engineering and machining. So a lot of things around the computer industry, and then got into aerospace and defense. I was curious about that field. I had an opportunity to go into that field. Was able to dabble into projects from, you know, the space station to the Hubble Space Telescope to even bunker busters and Gatling guns. So it was a little bit of everything. And then I always had a love for biology and wanted to, you know, seek out an opportunity in biology. The Howard Hughes Medical Institute was looking for somebody with my background. So they hired one and went into neuroscience and microscopy, got to work with Nobel laureates and a lot of amazing people from around the world in the science community. And that's really where the trigger was pulled to really seek out what it is I really wanted to do in life and the impact that I wanted to do. And so I, while working with Howard Hughes Medical Institute, I spun out a nonprofit organization, and we were geared more towards some of my passions as a little kid. And that was the paleontology, the cracking open of the slate. And so it was called PaleoQuest. And so I go out and try to discover things and work with organizations like the United States Geological Survey, Museum Systems, the Smithsonian, to local museums and became very good at finding. And that was really, really cool. And finding to the point that I was able to find some critters that were never found before.
Let's talk about that a little bit too. I want to talk about these, discoveries and the things that you found. And as you share about that, if you wouldn't mind also sharing that some of this has been chronicled through various television programs and things like that. So if people want to learn more about this, if you wouldn't mind sharing that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So diving deeper into the nonprofit of PaleoQuest, that's exactly what I did, was scuba diving. So I never to this day have scuba dove or dive dove in clear water. I realized that scuba diving would take me into places that no human has been before. And some of these places were unsearched, and this is along the Atlantic coastal plain of the United States, and a lot of river systems and swamps in those areas. Underwater is ancient formations, marine formations, and there's formations that are very interesting to paleontology, geology, folks like the United States Geological Survey, but they had no means or no way to get there. They needed some like moi to go down into black water, dive with sharks, dive with alligators, and try to see what's down there, whether it's the stratigraphy, so the ancient geological formations, and what was in those formations. So that curiosity trigger kicked in. Mm-hmm. And so through the nonprofit, I had sponsorships from Coral Edge Adventures, which is a scuba shop in Northern Virginia that would give us gear to go down in these areas. They are also tied to the USGS. And so I would look at these ancient formations and try to target areas that had poor fauna, meaning fauna that was poorly recognized or studied because of access. And so I would target those areas, which opens up more opportunity to find things that have never been found before. Sort of like this picture behind me, this was a new genus of whale that I discovered in one of these murky swamps in South Carolina. And so I would look for material, break it up, we would study it, I would collaborate with other museums, and that really caught the attention of a lot of folks, including National Geographic, Discovery Channel, NPR, and several cases where they went out on expeditions and filmed this, and that gave me a little bit of the credentials to continue that curiosity even further and start publishing on this work, getting into school systems and talking about discoveries. The National Geographic had a education arm called the Jason Project, and they asked me to be a host researcher. So under the National Geographic emblem, going into school districts and working with schools and talking about these discoveries. And that's when another trigger happened. And I was able to work with superintendents and talk about ways of bringing natural curiosity or sparking curiosity in the education sector, not only with students, but also with teachers, educators. And, this was obviously in parallel to my day job with the Howard Hughes Medical Institute. So I had to make a decision at one point, where do I want to really make the impact? Mm-hmm. And so I was doing a lot of work in the state of Texas. Chevron was a big funder in bringing me into schools and shuttling me around and giving talks and lectures. And so I decided, well, you know, maybe I need to create some workshops and really, you know, kind of make this a more formal process in the education sector. Mm-hmm. And that went over very well. Superintendents would invite me to some of their organizations. And so I had several within the state of Texas reach out and say, hey, why don't you come to our district and see, you know, if you could work for us to bring some really interesting methodologies. And this was right around the 2014-15 time period. Just got an award from the White House. The president had me come in. I gave a White House Live. And that was around the citizen science component of the nonprofit, where students and even the general public could contribute to active research. And so I thought, wow, how cool would it be is if we could, you know, capture a curiosity and embed citizen science as like that catalyst to bridging the gap between K-12 and post-secondary and, you know, create a way to make it as common practice. And so I had a decision to make, and it was hard because Howard Hughes Medical was like a utopia. It's a dream job to many, right, to be.
Yeah.
And so I had several superintendents ask if I could go, and I really looked at the state, and if I was going to make an impact, I needed to go in part of the state that really needed the most attention. So yes, I landed in West Texas.
Yep.
Right. Permian Basin. If you're watching Landman, yes, that's pretty much what it looks like out here.
Yep.
And then became chief innovation officer for district. So that work was like a, you know, working on a PhD and nuts and bolts there, and happy to answer any questions you might have about that type of work.
Well, I had the good fortune to work with you just a little bit. So our paths intersected while you were there doing that work. And I have a couple of questions growing out of all of this. First of all, I want to go all the way back to that young boy growing up on the farm in rural Pennsylvania and your school experience. What was it about your home and school experience that contributed to this this curiosity? Or was it the opposite? Did you not have the opportunity and say you were ready to escape and get into a place where you could really explore it? So let's start there. And then I want to fast forward ahead a little bit to right now.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And I think about it often. When I graduated high school, I felt like I never had the opportunity to see the things that the world had. The area, it was primarily farming, blue collar. That's just what people did. I mean, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's great. It wasn't for me, and I didn't realize it wasn't for me until I obviously left that area. And it's just like, there's so much, you know, so many other things out there that I wanted to see. So my, I'll never forget my, we had, you know, shop class when I was in school. Now it's CTE primarily, you know, it's kind of a twist on what, industrial arts it was called at the time. And, I had an industrial arts teacher, and he had a drafting class, and I absolutely love drafting. I love the fine details, and I love to create things, and I could see things, take a 3D object and draw it, very well. And so he really elevated that expertise to the point that I felt confident that, when I graduate high school, I think I'm going to go into, you know, mechanical design or engineering, which I eventually did make that in with Howard Hughes Medical. But it was the science, the discovery aspect of life is what really drew me, the innovation, and that's what really sparked my interest and really drove me into the career paths and the excitement that I'm currently doing now.
So then you fast forward to this opportunity to work at this district in West Texas.
Yep.
And you're the chief innovation officer, and you are driven by this desire to spark this curiosity in the learners that are there. And earlier you used the term engineer learning, which you and I have talked many times about. So yep. I want to go there too. So how did you set up structures and systems to more effectively engineer the learning of the learners in your district, and in the process, spark that curiosity or re-spark that curiosity that may have been somewhat extinguished through the years in school?
A lot of nuts and bolts to that answer. I thought I would go into the system and just expect things to happen the way that I thought they should.
Sure.
And so for me, there was a lot of learning that I had to do. Mm-hmm. I had to understand the people. I had to understand the struggles. And I had to understand the need, the perception of the school district, everything. And then try to execute on something that could show positive movement in a very short period of time, because you know that these positions are very critically politically charged, right? And so I promised the superintendent within 6 months that I would have a product for the district, a brand for the district. And so I started something called Pick Education. And this was an opportunity for students to pick their education, to pick the things that they like to do and incorporate them into the learning journey. And was not easy, but the systematic approach was that learning engineering process, and that is getting all stakeholders involved. And primarily that was the students, you know. Drives your interest. What are you curious about? What can we do better as a system to provide you with a quality education? And so I would ask these questions, you know, just sitting right in front of, you know, one student at a time, not a group, but one at a time, and really listen and find out what it is that they really love to do. And at the same time, I was, because of all these networks that I had in the sciences, especially with Howard Hughes Medical Institute, I was connected with researchers and universities around the world. And so I had access to them. And a lot of them were very interested in working with school systems. They just didn't know how. How do we do this? And it's the opposite for school districts. Like, how do we partner with these? So, a lot of my drive was to figure out that process, to really truly bridge the gap.
I love that.
And where students can actively contribute to active research that's happening now. And how do we create a process where that's constantly changing as research and science is changing? Mm-hmm. One year looks, every year looks different from the year before, because mm-hmm. We need to adopt a process or create a process that's how we do education. That's how we will stay on top. And with technology and advances that are happening now, it's even at a faster pace. And anybody that's in the K-12 system recognizes how slow the system works. It's a slow moving ship, and you're using a teaspoon to try to turn it, right? And so that's a lot of the work that I was doing, is really trying to figure that out. How do I take, the student interest, the student drive, the curiosity? How do I bridge the gap and bring in these partners from the outside, develop things that had never been developed? And so in that process, I had to throw away a lot of the standard processes, which did not go over very well for some of my colleagues.
You're kidding, Jason. I'm surprised.
Yeah, exactly. You know about this, right? But you can't, that can't stop the motivation, because it's, especially in the world of education, the student is the customer. Mm-hmm. The teacher is the return for investment, right? And so if we're creating opportunities for teachers to continuously grow and constantly improve on their skill set, and we're creating opportunities for students to engage in cutting edge in a fun environment, an interesting environment, and in an environment that connects them with things they never knew existed, then you're going to have something that ultimately is the future of education, or where we're going in education. And that's what I was trying to build. And I think that it became pretty successful at building it. But the students were the driver. The teachers were the driver. It's just putting pieces together and the right pieces together to make it happen and the right people.
Well, you made me think of a couple of things. And when you ask the student, you know, an open-ended question, I think back to the good old days when you might ask students, so what do you want to be when you grow up? What do you want to do when you grow up, right? So open-ended, and they don't know what they don't know. And, but it was several years ago, I heard someone say, let's turn that question around. Let's ask the question instead, what's a problem you're interested in solving?
Yeah.
And how would you like to go about solving it? And then building the learning experience all around that, because you've got their total interest, their total engagement, and then the learning, the curriculum part, all of that gets built around that. You're still addressing all the core content areas, and you're probably hitting on most, if not all, of the objectives in your curriculum, but you're doing so in a way that's leading to real learning. Learning that's going to stick and learning that's actually going to be able to be applied in the lives of these young people when they go into the workforce. So I love that. But I hear you. To do that is to go against a very deeply rooted paradigm that is, as we know, paradigms are tough to change, to move beyond. So yeah, I want to hear from you a little bit more about, you know, after having this experience, and now you've moved into another realm where you're working with schools and districts. But what are the possibilities that you see moving forward for education?
Yeah, there's tons of possibilities. There's tons of opportunity. I think with the world of technology advancing as fast as it is, AI is a hot topic. VR, AR is a hot topic. You know, it's the access to it's just limitless, right? I mean, you can connect to somebody around the world in a metaverse space in real time and discuss very detailed topics in the sciences or engineering fields, right? Mm-hmm. And do that in real time. So that those connections are just so much easier to happen. When I decided to leave the school district, I never really intended to retire from a school district. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to make impact on the masses. Mm-hmm. I wanted to create something. I had to go into a system to understand the system, to figure out how to break the system. And I don't know. Break is the right terminology, but really, I mean, in the majority of the people in the system they grew up through the system, and that's okay. But you have to have a balance of folks or connections with folks outside the system to truly understand what's happening. And so anyhow, the work that I was doing in the school district was, it was successful. We had great outcomes. There was a neuroscience high school course where students were working on, you know, brain data and answering scientific questions, sophisticated questions about the brain, which is the hardest scientific problem to solve.
Yeah.
You know, here we are in a school system and we're trying to, you know, figure out how to get this thing to work, but we don't really understand how it works, right? And so what a great opportunity to bring that to a school system where kids can contribute to one of the hardest scientific problems. And so taking that model and then working with technology, again, sitting down with students, mm-hmm. asking, what kind of medium do you want to learn in? Mm-hmm. What do you think is really cool out there? And mm-hmm. it was a year and a half to try to find a solution to AR, VR, because that was a medium that they wanted to be in, to find a solution. And then work with a company, a spin-out company out of West Virginia, and that was designed just for neuroscience, lo and behold, and bring that technology into a classroom where it belongs, because kids should have access to the tools that are being utilized by researchers and scientists. and then design something. So that's where I'm at now, is taking that methodology and that design process and that learning engineering process into a business that was geared into the sciences and meshing the education component to it. And now we have a way to make this a systemic process where kids can be, you know, active researchers as an extension to a university. And that's the everyday classroom, right? You still hit the, you know, in the state of Texas, the TEKS or the national standards, if, you know, around the country, you can still hit that. But it's something that, you know, in Finland, they just mastered way before us. And it goes back to what you were saying, you know, you take the curriculum and you wrap it around the problem, not the
right.
Yes. Right. And, you know, if you're going to solve for pi, give them a ball and try to figure out what the circumference is, right?
Right.
You know, try to hammer the formula and memorize it, but not really understand what it's for.
Right.
And so, you know, taking those processes and meshing them together. And now it's just amazing because, you know, we're national, we're looking at, you know, global opportunities and kids love it. Great outcomes. It's what students deserve. They deserve a high quality education, and they deserve to have connections, and they deserve to understand what the world is about, not just, you know, in isolation and not really understanding, because if you give them the content and the tools, they'll take off with it. And so many times it's the adult behaviors that get in the way. You just got to figure out how to be that innovative person and that agitator to get through them.
Well, that actually triggers my next question around that. And that is, if you could describe the ideal administrator, whether it could even be a teacher, a principal, a superintendent, that is best equipped to foster an environment in which this type of learning can take place.
Well, first, be a great listener. Listening to your customers is huge. And that's, you know, being in an administration, I get it. There is a lot of fires to put out. There's a lot of things happening, a lot of moving parts. But to be a great administrator, I think you really need to listen, be open-minded. But also for yourself, be naturally curious, or try to figure out how to be curious about things that are uncomfortable. Maybe your skill set isn't engineering or science, but maybe that's what you target, right? So something that I did with my team in the innovation office was I didn't send them to typical education conferences. You know, I sent them to just conferences that I felt as though, one, that could tie into the work that we're doing, but two, that were outside of the system, because that's find out what the real world is doing and how to bring that in and how do we design that or embed it, because that's what our students are going. So I think a good administrator recognizes that and recognizes that, you know, we can't live in a world of isolation, especially in the education sector. You know, a lot of things are up in the air, especially in public education right now. And so the more creative and the more progressive that we can think on opportunities outside of our dome of our community, the better off you're going to be.
I can personally attest to that. You did in fact do that as a leader. I'm thinking specifically of Kristen Wittenberg. And just grew to have such tremendous respect for her. But watching her grow as an educator and as a leader in your department and how critically important it was for her to have you convey the vision for where you wanted the department to go. And she was totally bought into it. And it was her vision as well. So it became a shared vision, and your outside the box approach to professional learning, she referenced to me several times. And it made me real excited, because what I heard in her was that excitement. I heard in her a learner. I heard in her the curiosity, and that's just infectious. So So why, when you build that within your department, if you will, and then those folks are leading the teachers and turn the students and so forth, it is so infectious. It's pervasive. And I was really blessed to be able to witness that firsthand. So thank you for sharing that. And before we jumped on this formally, you mentioned a superintendent in particular. And I do want to kind of call that to the forefront a little bit too, because folks listening to this may be superintendents or aspiring superintendents, and kind of like you establishing that vision and so forth. If you could paint a picture a little bit like you painted for me about this superintendent and why you felt their impact was so significant.
Yeah. I'll tell a short little story because it kind of leads to what we were talking, what you're referring to. I hear a lot of times what people think they envision culture should be. And that's great, but to really understand what culture is and how to build that. And I recognized it to a certain degree in some districts that I would go to, but when I went to Denton ISD, I was invited to go see an ESPN televised football game. And I went to the game and I just saw culture just unveiled at just amazing levels. When a superintendent walks out and everyone acknowledges them, from kids to parents to grandparents to the board, the foundations, and they all do it in just amazing and loving way. That's culture. That's really building a community. And it really stuck with me. I thought I recognized it in some, and there are some great, trust me, there's some amazing school districts where it's just a lot. But it really, when it came down to that individual, it was the love and passion coming out of the work that they do that really seeded into their community. And that's building trust. And we try to make innovative decisions, like big bonds and big progressive bonds. You need that. You need a community that trusts you, that is behind you, that is engaged. It was just amazing. I think a lot of that, I mean, there's obviously personality that's a big piece of it. But I think it goes back to really what we were talking about earlier, and that's listening and understanding. And then also the willingness to act upon it, right? And it's a fine balance, mm-hmm. What a political world it is for superintendents and leaders, and it doesn't seem like it's getting any easier. Mm-hmm. But boy, when you build a culture that everyone is just engaged and trusting and loving and sees the vision, it just, makes a lot of that go away. I don't know what the secret sauce is. I can speculate what the secret sauce is. I was just moved. And I think about it often because it was really, that's where we need to, when you talk about how do we, there's great pockets of things happening around the country. And how do we pull all that together and how do we work together in a systematic way? And I don't know if anyone has the answer to that. I guess the easiest response to an answer would be communication. Through things like your podcast or just people communicating together and understanding what success looks like and how to replicate it, what innovation looks like and how to replicate it and then act, and continue it. How do you take something and expand upon it? And a lot of that's your network and constantly communicating, but yeah.
Well, but you mentioned the secret sauce, and it's interesting. I shared this on a previous podcast, but I was a classroom teacher for 10 years and I was going to graduate school studying administration. And I actually was failing my very first course. And I never failed a class before. I was very frustrated because I just wasn't getting it. Talked to the professor and he said, Kevin, you're making it way too difficult. It's not that hard. And I think I see that so often in education. Sometimes we make it more difficult than it needs to be. And he said, Kevin, administration comes from the root word minister. Minister, an administrator, it's all about how they minister to others, right? And so he asked me to read a biography, autobiography, anybody, didn't matter. And as I read it with the filter of how is this individual ministering to others? And coming back to the superintendent, one of the things that you said before we jumped on the podcast today is that everyone that individual spoke to felt like they were the most important.
Yes.
That he truly cared about them. He wasn't just putting it on. He truly cared, listened, as you said, demonstrated genuine interest in empathy and understanding. And so I don't know that it's secret sauce, and it seems like something very practical and commonsensical, and yet not necessarily so common. But if we would, as you said, listen more, and to do so in an empathetic but also a curious way. I want to learn about this guy, Jason Osborne. I want to know more what makes him tick, because I have more to learn from you than necessarily the other way around. And I'm richer because every person I interact with, if I focus on what do I have to learn from them, just makes me that much more knowledgeable, have that much more information and interest, because now I can talk about different things because I don't do what you do. I've never scuba dived, and I've never certainly done it in the dark, murky waters with crocodiles and alligators. I haven't done that. But I kind of feel like I know it a little bit because I've watched your footage. I've listened to you talk about it, and I've learned from you. Speaking of learning from you, Jason, we have more to talk about, I have no doubt. But I try to keep our podcast in the 30-minute range. But I want to give you the opportunity to speak to something else, anything else about what you're just thinking that I did not give you the chance to address during this episode. So I'm giving you the last word, my friend.
Yeah. So what am I thinking? Well, I'm constantly thinking about how do we continue to really push a lot of the work that, you know, I obviously shared today at scale. One of the things I think about a lot is, you know, when you retire, can you check a box and say, I made an impact, I made a difference, and that impact is only going to make positive systemic change on our earth? And, you know, I think about that a lot. And if you think about things like that, then you act upon those things, right? And so I'm very gracious to, you know, be in the role that I am with SciGlass, and we're able to, you know, take some of that work as well as the work the company was doing prior to that and really make an impact, really make change, and change to the point that, you know, every curious student or teacher that gets into our software curriculum platform, it may open up something that they just never knew existed. And it might take them down a trajectory that they never thought possible, being the next neuroscientist or microscopist or molecular biologist or the next Nobel laureate or the next president or who knows what, because of the connections that they have. And you know, something we didn't cover is just like, you know, constantly reminding yourself, you know, you were put on this planet and you have some skill sets and you can grow upon those skill sets. Are you sharing that? And are you making an impact that makes positive change? And if we're in a place that we can all reflect on that, my goodness, how awesome would that be? Right.
Love that. That's an incredible note on which to end today. And Jason, I just want to thank you for being my friend and for being part of Just Thinking today.
Likewise. It's always a pleasure talking with you. I look forward to the next time.
Let's do it again. Thank you.